Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Searching for something to put a smile back on your face. Just remember, in unusual times, it can come from an unusual place. You need a partner for the ride, 'cause everybody needs a Clyde. So set your worries to the side. Just ask, say the word. Pretend I got a hand I can lend, 'cause when you really need a friend, just ask. Shit 90 Shows taught me.
Shit 90 Shows Taught Me was not filmed before a live studio audience.
Hello, and welcome to this amazing, wonderful mashup event of podcasts. It's a crossover event, people. I'm Jess Sterling. I'm here with my co-host from Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, Sarah Ferguson. Sarah, how are you?
Jess, I am ready to do revenge, and I don't know if that's grammatically accurate, but we're going for it.
But of course, we're not alone, because this is a crossover event, so we had to have another podcast to have a crossover with. And of course, we're joined by Mary.
Hi, yes, this is Mary Kwiatkowski of the Kowski Cast fame. Maybe you're listening to this there. Maybe you're listening to it on Shit 90 Shows. We don't know. That's the point of a crossover.
Yeah.
And I've got to say real quick, when I came up with the idea to talk about this show, I reached out to Sarah and I was like, this movie might sort of fit in with your podcast theme. And she said, oh yeah, and it fits in with yours too. I hadn't even thought of that until you said it.
Really? I thought the whole reason why you came to me with this was because of our lead character, Camila Mendez, obviously being in Riverdale. So I was like, yeah, this is like the perfect crossover.
That's hilarious. It is. And the funny other part is, so if you haven't listened to Kowski Cast, over there, I cover Riverdale. Like Sarah just said, the other show that actually was the first show we covered on Kowski Cast was the show called Revenge as well.
So pretty much you're like exclusively, like expert on this subject.
Yes.
And you're just like, yeah.
This is, but the only thing I could think about was all the 90s movies references.
Yeah. So if you're finding us in the Shit 90s Shows Taught Me feed and you're like, excuse me, this was made in 2022. We know, we understand. First of all, how dare you? We're allowed to break our own rules. Second of all, the reason we're covering it in this amazing crossover event is because there are so many 90s movie references. This feels very much like a modern 90s movie. It makes no sense to say that, but that's exactly how I feel about this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's definitely the an ode to the 90s teen, like, comedy in a way, or
like dramedy. Teen drama comedy.
We have a couple of different genres here, but all of the above. Mary, so I think that you were the first one to see it out of the three of us, like, and I thought this came out like this week, but it just did not. It's been out since what, September?
Yes, it came out in the end of September, and I watched it on Halloween. So I watched it in October, but my sister came over, and I was like, oh, this is like, this might be a good sister movie that we can watch while we're waiting for kids to ring the doorbell. Spoilers, no kids ring the doorbell. It's very sad, but, but we did watch the movie. And yeah, I had obviously heard of it because I follow all the Riverdale cast on Instagram. And so I had seen some of the Camila Mendes's updates of making the movie. And I thought it looked cool, but I've my new policy recently is like, don't watch any trailers to anything. They ruin too much. They spoil too many things.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just kind of go in blind, but I think I had seen a tweet from probably Kirsten McInnes, who's my co-host on Kowski Cast, and saying that she liked the movie. And I'm like, okay, if Kirsten gives it two thumbs up, then I'll check it out. And I don't know about you two. I loved it. Instantly loved it.
Yeah. I think for me, it was about 2 minutes in where I was like, this is a movie made for me.
Because it's a modern Clueless in a lot of ways.
Okay, every single movie that I love from the 90s is basically referenced in this movie, or there's bits and pieces of it that were inspired this movie. And it is just, for me, it's so good. I've watched it like 3 times and I have not gotten sick of it yet. It is kind of my new favorite movie.
It's such a great feeling to be watching a movie knowing that you could watch it again in a couple days and you'd be fine. Like that you don't get sick of it. It was, I felt so different after watching this movie than almost any of the other teen Netflix movies that have been coming out recently. Like in the last couple years, this one came out and I was like, oh, that was like a real movie. That felt like not a Netflix movie. It felt like it had a good plot, smart writing, funny acting, like the whole style of the whole thing is beautiful. So I really enjoyed it. I loved the, like you said, the 90s references, which because I went into it blind, I didn't realize if I had read like one thing about it going into it, I would have known like that's kind of the point of the movie. But instead I was sitting there and after, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes, I'm like, huh, this has got to be intentional, all of these references. Like, this is very Clueless. This is very Heathers. And this is very Jawbreakers, right? Like,
yeah, really exactly. Like it. When you told me about it, Mary, and I saw a couple of pictures of it, a couple of stills, I think the words I said to you, I was like, oh, I'm getting Clueless / Heather vibes.
Yes. Yes, 100%.
Yeah. So Jess, overall, what did you think of this movie?
I really liked it. I think without giving because this is just in case people are still listening to know, like, is it worth watching? It's worth watching. Go watch it. Yes. Would definitely be what I would say. I would also say it very much surprised me. I think the thing about a lot of teen comedies is that a lot of times they're really predictable. You kind of know how it's going to end. You kind of know what beats they're going to hit throughout the story. And to Mary's point, it felt like a real movie. And like what I think Mary means and what I certainly mean by that is like it feels like a movie you would see in a movie theater. It doesn't feel like a made-for-TV film like a lot of Netflix, especially rom-coms feel. They have that kind of Hallmark vibe to them. Whereas I think this is a lot more like they do call it a maybe more of a dark comedy. It's a revenge story. And so it is a little bit dark and twisty. And I really, really enjoyed that. Of course, all the homages I'm definitely here for. I think it's really fun because Sarah, a lot of the time when we are covering 90s movies, sometimes it can be a bit sad that you go back and watch something and it doesn't necessarily hold up in the same way, either because it feels super outdated and not in the cutesy way of, oh my gosh, I remember owning that phone, in the way of, oh my God, that guy's so racist.
So
it's kind of nice to be able to watch something that has the same vibe as the 90s movies that we know and love, especially the school revenge type ones. But isn't as cancelable as those movies are because it is modern. So I really, really liked it. I would recommend people go watch it and then come back and listen to this podcast because we're about to spoil like everything for you.
Sounding endorsement.
And to go on with that, and so I will warn now, I might start to get into spoilers.
Yeah, no, full-blown spoiler territory. We're allowed.
If you want to see it, go see it. I feel like the whole look of the movie to me is like 90s inspired Gen Z. And oh, I'm saying yeah. this as like a very firm millennial. So like, what do I know about Gen Z? Firm but like, I feel like all of the stuff, and I didn't come up with this. I saw this reference in a YouTube video, but they said that it felt like one of the first pieces of content that's about modern day teenagers that feels more like modern day teenagers, while fully understanding that it's a very specific group of people here. That's not like, these are very wealthy, you know, students in sort of like a fantasy school that probably yeah. does exist, but it's not the everyday person. But when you compare this to something like, He's All That, right? And like the references that came out in that movie, because that was also very clearly 90s inspired modern movie, they're like, oh, the kids, they're on TikTok, that therefore everybody must be TikTok famous in this exactly. movie, and this is like, no, like there's social media, they mentioned the Instagram crowd and stuff, but I think the Gen Z elements that they put in are a lot more like realistic. Like a lot of the guys have their nails painted because that's a thing that like guys do now, and they don't need to like call it out or talk about it. It's just a thing that like I felt like, even though a lot of the actors in the movie are closer to millennial age, I felt like they did a better job representing what more people look like or talk like nowadays.
Yeah, that's a great point. Jessica and I covered Pretty Little Liars Original Sin. And I remember one of the things that we said when we were covering that show was like, sounds like a bunch of boomers are writing dialogue for these teenagers. Yeah. And I didn't feel like this movie did that. I thought that they talked like teenagers. And I also felt like they dressed like elevated teenagers. Of course, when we get this California high school, there's always going to be a sense of elevated fashion. I think that Clueless was a great representation of that, of like, who is going to be wearing these ensembles, but whoever they are, I love them. And I was looking at the schoolgirl outfits that they were wearing. It reminded me of like a little bit of Scream Queens. But also, mm-hmm. It reminded me of Clueless or Romy and Michelle or any of those 90s movies. It was really well done. But then it also had like the crop tops and like there's certain like looks that are very teenager or young 20 something that I think that they nailed really well that made it believable that these kids were high school seniors, which is part of the hard thing to do when any of us watch these shows. We all know that they're 27 years old pretending to be teenagers.
Yeah. I really like, along those same lines, I thought that the fashion was one of the main things that really to me felt like it did a great job at combining modern, fresh looking fashion with like inspirations from the 90s, because let's face it, like 90s fashion is back in style now, like 90s and early aughts is back in style. So I felt like this is honestly the perfect time for them to do these kind of homages or kind of love letters to the 90s. And so like you're saying, Sarah, even the like the uniforms they have to wear at school are both like feel Clueless-y and feel 90s, but look like they're modern. They look like something you would see in a way that is very Hollywood, right? That like, okay, probably most school uniforms aren't this cute, but in Hollywood they are.
It also reminds me of the new Gossip Girl. The new Gossip Girl did uniforms really well also, but I swear to goodness, if I didn't have to do uniforms when I was in high school, but if I got to wear a cape and a beret like these people do,
the beret, really though, I hated the beret.
Really?
It looks so pretentious. Like, are you French? What are you doing?
They're all pretentious. They're wearing capes, Jessica.
They are wearing capes.
And this is what I love about this is like, when you watch a lot of these movies that it's inspired by, it, when you watch Clueless, modern day or no, teens in that time were not dressing like the people in Clueless were, like every day, but they were inspired by that look. So when you have a movie, I'd rather the movie say, instead of being hyper realistic, we're going to be hyper stylized, and we're going to pick a style and we're going to go with it. And it reminded me in a lot of ways of like, okay, so some of my references here are not just 90s things, but as a person born in 1994, a lot of like very early 2000s stuff is also what I was thinking of as references. So like
totally
the Click books, those series, I was very like, just in terms of like the ultra wealthy going to a private school, they didn't have uniforms, but they definitely like talked about fashion in those movies a lot, or those books a lot.
Those books had the pattern, the gingham.
They have the
it's not gingham, it's plaid, like plaid,
the plaid print on the book covers. Yeah.
Yes.
And so that was something I thought about a lot. Not going to speak as much toward the movie because it wasn't as good, but those books, which were early 2000s as well. And yeah, like obviously the movie here is set in Miami, I believe, is so coastal, but it, so I don't have like a ton of experience with that area, but the idea of like, you know, much like something that's like the Click is set in New York, and a lot of these other movies that we've mentioned are set in California, so it's kind of like this, you know, area that I feel like people think of as like elite, I don't know, like
a lot of wealthy people live there. It's very like you're a socialite, which is also how this movie obviously begins, right? They're in a private, they're all going to a private school. So everyone's family is like super wealthy. And yeah, it's funny, like watching this and just watching how many of the boxes they tick for like, not even just a 90s teen movie, but like kind of just teen movies in general, right?
Yeah.
Where we get like a makeover, which, gosh, I freaking love a makeover. And I love that in this movie, they call it out as like, this is problematic. And she's like, yeah, but I like really want a makeover.
Yeah,
though.
But it's
like,
fun.
But it's fun. I loved that line. It was so, because that's exactly how I feel whenever I see a makeover on my screen, whether it be movie or TV or, I mean, I even do makeovers in my like D&D character because I just love that trope so much. It just brings me so much joy. It's fun. Like, it might not be like the best thing, but it brings me so much joy. I love a makeover.
Was anyone else addicted to Trading Spaces, Boys versus Girls when they were younger?
I remember Trading Spaces. But
Trading Spaces, Boys versus Girls was the kid version where they would have like preteens and teenagers. And I looked it up. I wanted to apply, but the application was ridiculous. It was like, your bedroom must be like 20 by 20 foot or bigger. And I'm like, well, never mind.
Oh my gosh.
You had to have, you had to have like, if you were a girl applying, you had to have a boy that you knew who would be willing to do it, who lived like a mile away or less. And so I was like, well,
how does anybody get on this show with those requirements?
Yeah, but you just like, they would switch and they would be like, well, Mary likes candy, so we're going to turn her entire room into a candy store.
Oh no.
So they were so extreme, and I would watch it and be like, this 14-year-old will like this room for a year and then want to change it. Because they would do like beach themed and put sand in the room. What kind of idea?
So extra and awful. I remember like very like something very similar on all of those shows said like ridiculous things like that. Like Pimp My Ride, there was a guy who got a hot tub put in the back of like his car. And I'm like, how are you supposed to just drive around with a hot tub in your car?
I don't know, but my Polly Pockets car had that.
Dude, they remade Polly Pockets. Remember how they made Polly Pockets and they were big and it was like BS? And it's like, these are not the legit Polly Pockets.
In your pocket.
But guess what? They remade them again and they really are small again.
Oh, yay.
So I asked for Christmas for a Polly Pocket. It's all I want is a freaking,
what are you gonna do with it?
I just play with it, like heal my inner child. Like all I want is a Polly Pocket. It's just like the only thing that I want.
Listen, the heart wants what the heart wants,
and it wants a Polly Pocket.
Oh my gosh! So if anyone is listening to this who isn't planning on watching the movie but wants a really quick summary, Let's see. We've got our main character, Drea, played by Camila Mendez, which we'll talk about more in a minute, who's like in the popular crowd. Sometimes they say she was the most popular girl at school, but then it's like really easy to get rid of her. So how popular was she?
Exactly.
And she's dating like a really popular guy at school and everything's going great for her. Until he asks her to send him a sex tape, which she does, and then he leaks it everywhere and sends it to everyone else. That's why you can't trust boys with Snapchat. Lesson learned. And then because of that, she punches him. And I think it's really the punching of him more so than the sex tape that like ruins her reputation. And then when she comes back to school the next year after meeting a girl named Eleanor over the summer, Eleanor moves to her school and gives a really traumatic story of like a mean girl that had outed her and called her a predator when she was like 13 at summer camp or something.
Right.
So they go to school and they're both like, okay, we're going to do revenge for each other. And Eleanor is going to take down Drea's ex-boyfriend and Drea is going to take down the girl who outed Eleanor at summer camp. And they spend most of the movie like coming up with these plans and bonding, doing a makeover, like Sarah said. But plot twist towards the end of the movie, it turns out Drea was the mean girl all along. Yes. To Eleanor.
Yeah. And this was Eleanor's big plan. She saw that Drea went to the school and she was like, I'm going to infiltrate this. And she befriended Drea and was like, I am actually going to ruin you from the inside. And that was a really interesting twist. I don't think I really saw it coming. The only thing that I got flagged with was, So in the very, very beginning, Drea doesn't really give Eleanor much time of day, but her car doesn't start and she needs to get a ride from Eleanor. And that's kind of how their friendship starts. And I remember Eleanor saying something where it's like, oh, your car issue is blank. I used to fix up old cars at my dad's garage or something like that. And that was the only time. And when her car didn't start, there was like a little inkling in my head that I was like, maybe Eleanor like did something to the car.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clever because if you don't see anything coming, it might be a complete surprise. To me, I would say it was like 90% of a surprise because I also clocked the car thing early on. I was like, I feel like she probably did this. But then I guess I just made myself believe maybe she did it because she wanted to befriend her.
Right? That's the genius of it. Enough time passes and they become good friends. For me, I didn't necessarily, the car thing was weird. It didn't really sit in my brain for very long. That was kind of like, bloop, okay, gone. Who cares? What I did notice was like, I think I was doing something that morning and I was like, oh, I got to pause down. Like I had to go change the laundry or something. And I hit pause on my TV and I was like, oh my God, there's like 40 minutes left of this movie. I was like, how is there that much time? And so then I probably should have realized like, oh, there's going to be a massive twist because then there's a whole mess of other crap that has to happen. But I did notice the time I thought was like, this is a longer movie for like at least where we were in the storyline. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, we're getting to the part where the revenge should almost be done. And then we wrap things up, but it kept going.
It was also something where I feel like when the twist happens and it's revealed that Eleanor is sort of like trying to take revenge on Drea this whole time, something clicked in my brain that was like, oh, I feel like I had seen a tweet or heard someone mention something about there being a twist, but I had completely forgotten it when I went to watch the movie. I will say on a rewatch, it's way more obvious.
It is, which is really cool. I love when movies do that.
Yes, there's almost everything that Eleanor says early on and a lot of the looks that she gives Drea are very much hinting that she's doing something the whole time. I wrote some of them down. And also the fact that like one of the first lines in the whole movie is Drea saying that she says, you know, when you've really reached the top, when someone wants to destroy you, in this story, nothing is as it seems. And Drea says that. It's like the second line of the movie. And then you forget about it.
You just want them to be, because all you want is for this to be the story where Drea is reformed from being a nasty, mean girl to being like best friends with the school weirdo or whatever. And you want both of them to get their revenge, because, I mean, let's be fair. We start off the movie with Drea being a victim of her boyfriend sending out an intimate video of her, like a sex tape. And so we're very conditioned instantly to be sympathetic towards her and to want to root for her because her boyfriend is a douche. And so it's one of those things where, of course, we don't want to believe that Drea could possibly do anything so nasty as what Nora is talking about.
Right. But also, it's like you see throughout the movie, Drea never really is totally reformed. She still has that edge to her where she's bloodthirsty for revenge and taking people down and isn't very, sympathetic towards other people a lot of the times. But once again, we meet her and we're we're rooting for her. Back to Mary's point, I'm thinking one of the first lines that Eleanor says is she doesn't know this yet, but we're going to be besties. And when you first hear it, it's kind of maybe she's not used to being that valley girl, besties, woo. But there's such an edge to the way that Maya Hawke says that line that if you interpret it differently, she's kind of snarking on that. And it's very interesting how you can perceive things two different ways once you complete the movie.
Yeah, I had initially interpreted that as, so I was surprised after the beginning of the movie, and there's a good 10-15 minutes before the opening credits happen, and then they switch point of views from Drea to Eleanor. And when we start getting, there's a lot of narration in this movie, and when we start getting Eleanor's narration, I was unclear whether or not that was sort of happening from the perspective of that time or if it was later on. And so when she said that line, I was thinking, oh, maybe this is just future self narrating and oh, they're going to happen to be best friends. Yes. Or she, for whatever reason, is targeting Drea and wanting to seek her out and, injuring her car so they can become friends, but for good reasons. Cause she wants to be friends with her. I didn't make the connection. But there's all kinds of moments, and it's really obvious, on a second watch. There's a line where Drea is talking about how narcissistic people can't see what's coming to them. And when she says that, Eleanor gives her a look really?
No.
Really? And I remember on the first time, pausing that and rewatching that and being that's a weird look there. And then I just stopped thinking about it. And even when she's telling Drea the story at the beginning, which I will say is the most unrealistic part of this movie, is the fact that Drea did this horrible thing to Eleanor when they were, I'm just going to double check, it was either 13 or 14, which regardless was 3 to 4 years ago, given the fact that they
are
rising seniors. And I'm like, how do you forget something when it was 3 to 4 years ago that you did? Yeah. And she spells out exactly what it was. And then she pauses and looks at Drea, and Drea says, oh my gosh, that's horrible. Wow, that person's terrible. And you can tell that she's wow, she does not realize that was her.
Because even if she doesn't recognize Eleanor, which maybe she wouldn't because, Eleanor changed her name and got a rhinoplasty and there's all these things that she did. Maybe you can't recognize someone's face, but you would think from hearing a story of literally something that you did in Mary is saying an exact detail of it was at a summer camp. It wasn't just at school. It's very specific details. And it takes a very narcissistic, self-centered person to just frankly just forget that. And it's when you think about it, it's how many awful things has Drea done that she just really doesn't even remember doing or doesn't think twice about doing, which is even more terrifying. It's awful.
And it was complicated too, because the instance in question is, yeah, they go to a summer camp and Eleanor idolizes Drea and says that that girl made her feel confident and safe. And so Eleanor opens up to Drea, tells her that she's queer, and she says it felt great. It was really awesome to open up to someone. And then the girl, Drea, told everyone that Eleanor tried to hold her down and kiss her. And I think the complicated part is that they needed to make this a thing that, like, part of me feels like if this had happened young enough to where they could have realistically forgotten about it, like 8, 9, 10, maybe even 11 years old, I almost feel like, and you know, I'm sure that there are people out there who have experiences, but I almost feel like at that point, other people might have forgotten or like not thought of it as such a big thing at the time. So it needed to be old enough to where it was remembered by Eleanor and other people, right, but not by Drea. And that's where it was. It didn't quite hit the mark with me, but like I said, this movie is not the most realistic. it's just fun.
Yeah. I actually I don't know if I realized that they were as old as 13. I really do think, like, when I was thinking back on the movie, that in my head I rewrote it to that they were younger, like 8 mm-hmm. or 10. But I think that Jess is right. Like, I think that Drea has done so many nasty things in her life that she just forgot. It's terrible, but I guess that's what's going on.
It's really funny that we end up, like, this really does kind of feel, gosh, I'm trying to think of, like, which movie it feels most like, because even, like, Cher and Clueless, she's really not malicious ever. Like, yeah, she's popular and stuff, but nothing she's ever doing is really with malicious intent. I guess it gives me much more of a, like, a Mean Girls vibe, mm-hmm. or I'm thinking even, what was the other movie I was thinking of? I don't know, it's just, like, where the girls are much harder. They're like, they're sturdier, right? It's like, oh, but we're still like very entertained by them and we want to watch them, but we don't like love them, because let's face it, Drea is really mean and has done some really, really awful things. And Eleanor, like, does some really deplorable, awful things in the sake of revenge. But still deplorable. She literally, like, T-bones Drea's car. Like, Drea has to go to the hospital. Like, there's so many terrible, like, I think the moment I was starting to be like, oh my gosh, these girls, was when they decide that the best way to get those students caught making, like, growing drugs on school property was by drugging the students.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Like, where are we? What are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you guys aren't the good guys. What are you doing?
No.
And that's why, like, before I clicked on the movie, I saw that it said teen dark comedy. And I was like, okay, dark comedy. And that made me think of, like, okay, Heathers or something more along that lines. Like, you know, Mean Girls, while there is some really, like, horrible stuff that happens in Mean Girls, it's a lot more, like, exaggerated things that people really do, whereas
it's
this,
like,
one,
over the top on purpose, because it's a parody of those types of movies.
Yeah, so there was a point about halfway through this movie where I'm like, okay, we've definitely leaned into the darkness a bit. But even when we first meet Eleanor, she says, my therapist says that hurt people hurt people, but I just don't think that applies to teenage girls. I think sometimes they're just evil. And she's also talking about herself there as well.
Absolutely.
Oh, Sari, you know what the movie was that it was reminding me of?
What's that?
We just covered this recently. Cruel Intentions.
And
obviously we have Sarah Michelle Gellar, and she's the principal, and of course she's, like, just like her character Catherine. But I think the reason it even more gives me Cruel Intentions vibes is because it's like Cruel Intentions if both Catherine and, like, the innocent girl were both evil.
Like Reese Witherspoon's character, what was her name? I forgot.
Yeah, I'm blanking on it. But if they were both evil, that's kind of what, like, Do Revenge is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I definitely got Cruel Intentions vibes as well. And I think
Annette is her character.
Annette. Name. Okay. Yeah. I was close with Anne. I wasn't that far off. That's so true, because I think that the one of the things that, you know, you just recently saw Cruel Intentions for the first time that you were so taken by, you were like, what in the world is Sebastian and Catherine doing? The Sarah Michelle Gellar and the Ryan Phillippe roles. You're like, what kind of menaces are these people? And these people are menaces.
But it's like one is a secret menace, which I think is so much more fun because you're not like you the whole time. The whole conceit of the movie is built upon you sympathizing with Nora and feeling bad for her and wanting, and you equally want both of them to get revenge, right? You want Drea and Nora both to be best friends and, you know, fulfill their destinies of seeking revenge on those who wronged them. But like secretly the whole time you don't know that like they're both kind of evil. Like, even though, but this is the thing, right? Like, this is why they say hurt people because like for Eleanor, maybe she always had that little bit in her, right? That potential, the little mote of potential of like she could do bad things. But the reason that it was released into the world is because of what Drea did to her that tarnished her and tainted her and made her just this have this bitterness inside of her that she needed to expel. Whereas Drea is a little bit more like been living her whole privileged life, messing up people's lives and not realizing
it. Drea's not privileged. And that's why she was always trying to fight to be on top, because Drea, her mom is a nurse. She lives a very humble life. She's at the private school on scholarship.
Right.
The party in the very beginning when we first meet her, like, I mean, that whole birthday party where they had cupcakes with their face on it was paid by her best friend.
It's worse than being a birthday party. It's not even that. This is the one thing when I watched the movie the first time where I'm like, what is this event that is happening? It is a congratulations, Drea, for getting on the Teen Vogue Next Generation list.
That's what the party is for.
And it's also a party for her having a feature in the school magazine. It's not even, I was like, oh, well, she's like magazine. On the magazine, but it's just like a magazine written by her friend who later does a piece on Max. So that was the one thing, because they really don't like, they don't really walk you through this movie very much. They jump around a lot. There's a lot of different points of view and narration, and they kind of just throw you into whatever the event is. And this one, that one definitely took me a while to figure out like what is happening.
Yeah, there's party. Balloons with her faces on it.
There's balloons. There's a bush that's carved to look like her.
Yeah, but the party is very understated.
Oh, it's very understated. Understated. Yeah, the dialogue is hilarious in this movie. She Sarah says, she says, I spent 17 years meticulously curating the perfect life, and now that I have it, no one's going to take it away from me. And then it immediately gets taken away. Sorry, Drea. Shouldn't have set yourself up for that. So do we want to go through, I have a list here of all of the movies that I felt like this movie referenced, and we can talk kind of about some of the moments. So we've mentioned Clueless, which is made in 1995 or released in 1995. I think like right off the bat, the most obvious one for me was the school uniforms, which definitely sort of, while Cher doesn't have a uniform, her and Dion both wear like the plaid outfits all the time in that movie. Do you have some? I have a whole list. So I want to see, let you guys. Oh yeah.
There was Horowitz Hall, which is Cher's last name.
Yeah.
Yes. Horowitz Hall.
Mean Girls also does this, but Clueless does as well, where they're giving the tour and it's like, oh, like these are the nerds and these are the stoners.
10 Things I Hate About You does it too. That's the thing. Like that's such a 90s trope that like every movie does it in the 90s.
And what I actually really, really liked about that was, I didn't catch this the first time, but on the second time, this was another nitpick I had in the movie, was when Gabby, who we later find out is Max's younger sister, when she gives Eleanor a tour of the school, I thought she was like her assigned tour buddy or something. But no, Eleanor's just standing in front of the school and Gabby walks up and we're like, want a tour? And Eleanor says, well, I wouldn't be, she says something like, hold on, I wrote it down. It was about 90s movies. I, as a disciple of 90s teen movies, I'd be offended if I didn't get one. Yeah, so yeah, they that's like a good definitely line. Reference that. Which
but
also
I love they update it too, because yeah. like it, you know, it's like, oh, these are like the goths, right? In the 90s, it would be like, these yeah. are the goths, these are the jocks, these are the whatevers, like queen bees. Where in this one, it was like, oh, those are the Instagram witches. And there's the horny theater kids who try to mount a mostly white production of Hamilton.
Yeah. I also loved this on the second watch. They're playing Zip Zap Zop in the background. And I'm like, oh, wow, the attention to yeah. detail.
So, yes. Mary, you had to have done improv classes, right?
I did theater. We did it as a warm up, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I took improv classes when I was a kid, it was always, we were always Zip Zap Zopping.
Yes. Yes. I thought that was so funny. Yeah. And, but like this one definitely in 10 Things I Hate About You and in, Clueless, they both do the walk and talk tour outside. And so that also helps. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I also put Mean Girls for that. They're also the popular kids are sitting around the fountain, which they do a lot of like sitting around the yes, fountain and posing in Clueless. And Clueless. Yeah. Also made me think of Friends. Like I know that that's, yeah. Yeah, not a movie, but in there. And there's a scene later on when Drea is in class and she's writing and she has that same like fluffy pink tipped pin.
Oh, Cher has that. Yeah.
Yeah. I that was one I did notice when I was watching. I didn't see like Horowitz Hall. I think I had that pen in blue. It came with like a little diary, you know, with one of those little locks on
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah, all of those, absolutely. I was thinking even the narration is very Clueless, because Cher narrates her own story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also very Mean Girls too, because Katie does yeah. that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, they also have, so I don't know if either of you, I haven't seen this one, but there's a couple references to the movie Election from 1999.
Oh, recently watched Election in the PSR Discord.
Mm-hmm. And that was one that the writers of this movie said that they, when they were thinking of doing the voiceovers from multiple points of view, they were referencing that movie.
And that is a big revenge story as well. Like not yes. in the same way. It's not like girl versus girl, teen girl versus teen girl. It's like teacher versus teen girl.
Oh, that was, yeah, it's so weird. Like the teacher.
It's very
like
weird now. That's what I'm saying. Like it's very outdated because it, but it's, I guess it's that way on purpose, right? Because she drives him so mad that he just loses his mind.
Yeah, it's like this girl who's like a perfectionist and the teacher is just so over and annoyed with her that mm-hmm. he's like, I can't have her be school president because I run the student council.
Yeah, he doesn't want to spend time with her at all. She's so annoying.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, plays by Reese Witherspoon and then Matthew Broderick is in it. It's a really good movie.
And that's what they also said about that movie was they referenced the line when Drea says narcissists never know they're being played. And they said that a character in that movie, Jim McAllister, apparently.
Oh, that's that. Jim McAllister is Matthew Broderick. So that's okay. The mm-hmm.
And then they said that like Drea's ambition of trying to get into Yale.
Yes.
It mimics Tracy's. That
totally reminded me of that. It also reminded me of Blair from Gossip Girl. All she wanted to do was get into Yale. And guess who got into Yale instead? Serena Vanderwoodsen, you stupid, stupid bee. Yeah, it's a classic.
You know, in Riverdale, I'm just going to tie this in now here.
Yeah.
There's also a big plot point about people wanting to get into Yale. And
everybody wants to get into Yale.
Spoilers for Riverdale season 4. Three kids want to get into Yale.
Yeah.
Two of them get in. They say like they don't have a spot for the other one. One of them dies and they're like, well, you can take their spot. It's so bad. They're just like, when the person dies, people are like, I bet you just wanted their spot in Yale. I'm like, that's not how it works.
Well, that's kind of what they did in this movie too, because once Max gets suspended at the end of the movie,
yeah.
Sarah Michelle Gellar was like, hey, if you want, I can call Yale and you can take his spot. I can't make any promises. It's like, you don't even have like the authority to even offer that.
This is not a thing. All right. We talked about 10 Things I Hate About You from 1999, yes. With the talking about the school cliques. There's also the really obvious Drea and Russ have a paintball fight.
Obsessed. And when I tell you, 10 Things I Hate About You was the film. It was like one of my favorites. And it was like the one where every time that paintball scene came on, I was like, I just want my first kiss to be playing paintball, like in the hay. And like when I saw them throwing these, this also reminded me of Princess Diaries. When they're
throwing
these like paint balloons. I was like, yes, I was living for that.
Loved
moment.
That.
Yes. Princess Good. Diaries from 2001. So very close to the 90s, where Mia and her mom throw darts at the paintballs that are, or the paint balloons as well.
Yeah.
Also just on 10 Things I Hate About You for a second. So I watched the movie many times growing up and I'm like, oh, this is a cute movie. And then my brother moved to Seattle and I went to visit him and he's like, oh, do you want to go to this park? Do you want to go like to this bridge? And the whole time I was there, I'm like, this is 10 Things I Hate About You. This is the park they did the paintball. This is the bridge they walked under.
Oh my gosh.
It's the bridge troll. And I had no idea because I don't know. I guess when I watched it, I just didn't realize it was set in Seattle.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. How fun.
Yeah, so that's fun. Okay, Cruel Intentions, 1999, yes. Which this movie, this was a movie that I watched probably for the first time in like, I don't know, 10th or 11th grade. And I felt like when I watched, I felt like I was too young. Like that just shows my like growing up when I watched it. I'm like, yeah. Well, I shouldn't be watching this movie. Yeah. So I like watched it at school. Like when I was staying after on my laptop. I after school, I would pick up my brother and take him home. So I was like sitting at school. I'm like, I can't watch this at home. Like I'll watch it on my computer. I can't watch this at home. But yeah, man, that movie. And so that movie is based on the book. Oh, here's going to be butchering some French here. Les Liaisons Dangereuses or something, which is The Dangerous Liaisons.
Yeah.
Which was also another movie. And that was made. The book was in 1782, but the original movie was earlier than that. So that's what Cruel Intentions is based on. And Cruel Intentions itself, much like several of these other movies we've talked about, like 10 Things I Hate About You, was the 90s trend of like making movies based on like Shakespeare and like other classic
Naming of
literature.
The Shrew and Othello and all of those. Yeah.
She's the Man and the 12th Night. Yeah. Stuff like that. So, and I think even She's All That is one of them, but I'm not going to get into it. Yeah, that feels like a thing. So obviously Sarah Michelle Gellar, like you mentioned, who's basically just playing her character.
Catherine, which I love. She was so much Catherine in that. I was like, can you imagine a world where Catherine got hired as a private school headmistress? Oh, the horrors of the horrors.
I wanted at one point for like, I don't know, at the end of the movie for the headmaster to like pull out the necklace or whatever that she had that Catherine wore.
I would have flipped shit. Yeah, that would have been so good. That would be so good.
Also, have either of you watched Buffy?
Mm-mm. No, I'm like circling around Buffy. I watched the first episode.
Okay. I had so many people tell me that I should watch Buffy when I was like in college. And I said, I can't because all I can see Sarah Michelle Gellar as is the character from Cruel Intentions.
Yeah. You're like, how is she a hero?
I can't be a hero. Whereas most people I think feel the opposite. They watched Buffy and they're like, I can't watch her be the mean girl. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So also at the end of the movie, Drea and Eleanor driving off together in the car is like very driving off
In the car by herself. And in the beginning Eleanor was driving on the bridge
on the bridge,
just like Cruel Intentions.
Also the song, there's a song that plays Fatboy Slim's Praise You plays in the background of the scene where they take Max down at the end of the movie, which is also played in Cruel Intentions.
Yeah, the last scene when Sebastian was at Sebastian's funeral, and the books started getting passed out, and everybody was like, what's going on? And that was very reminiscent of Do Revenge, when everybody was getting the text messages and everybody started talking. And
it happened twice.
It happened when Drea and Nora announced that Max was cheating on everybody and everything. And then it happened at the end, where it was at the party where the audio, when they outed him that he was responsible for leaking the video in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that was very Cruel Intentions.
It definitely was. In that, we've mentioned it a couple times, Mean Girls, obviously lots of references here as well. But that was also one where, so the imagery where Drea and Eleanor leak Max's texts, and there's like havoc in the hallways. There's a teacher blowing the fire out of the trash can, with the burn book. Like, that is all very, very reminiscent. There's even a scene where Drea is like standing in the middle of the hall while people like run around her in chaos. That's very similar to Regina standing there as well. Yes. A lot of similar imagery in the scene where they drug the entire senior class. There's a student who tries to use their shoe and like tries to get their mom to come pick them up, which is the same as when a kid in Mean Girls is like, "Mom, come pick me up. The girls are going crazy. I want to go home. It's not safe here."
How Eleanor becomes the monster eventually.
Yes. Yep. That was the next one I was going to say. Eleanor's entire arc fits Katie's arc. I wrote C-A-D-Y.
It's C-A-D-Y. That's how you spell her name. It's confusing, Katie. Yeah. How about you just change your name to a regular spelling? No offense.
But then a reverse there in Do Revenge, Drea forgets Eleanor's birthday, which really upsets her. And Katie forgets Janice's art show at the end, which is like a big turn in their friendship. And then when Eleanor hits Drea with the car, I was kind of inspired by the Regina getting hit by the bus.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Yes.
The school bus. Yeah. Now, have either of you seen Jawbreaker from 1990?
Yes. So I actually watched Jawbreaker the same time I watched Do Revenge the first day, because I was so inspired to continue. And I think that Do Revenge has a lot of really specific references to Jawbreaker. But Jawbreaker is like 10 times more cracked. one line in particular that was a direct rip was when Drea was like, "I'm going to murder them." And Eleanor was like, "Really?" And then Dre was like, "No, stupid. Like, I'm just joking." That was a direct line from Jawbreaker. The way that I don't know if Jawbreaker was the first one to do it, but you know how in these teen movies, all the mean girls are always walking in a line horizontally down the hall and not single file. You're really taking up a lot of hallway space. They did that in Jawbreaker. A little bit of the fashion, but definitely like the mean girl aesthetic. Jawbreaker is a trip and a half. I recommend people watching it, but it's wild. It's more like Heathers than it is like Clueless. There's a little bit of like a cult classic, like kind of ooky spooky feeling to it. But I really liked it. It was just wild. I was watching it and I'm like, "What the heck is happening here?" Crazy.
I definitely need to add that one to my list to watch next. Another line, the one you mentioned, of course, but another one is the line where Drea says, "I created you and I can just as easily destroy you."
Yes.
Is also very similar to the "I made you, I can just as easily break you," which was in Jawbreaker.
Yes. So there's a makeover moment. So the mean girl makes over Judy Greer.
Love Judy Greer.
I know, everyone's favorite side character. And Judy Greer becomes like this like really popular girl, kind of like Eleanor, but then she becomes like the meanest bitch ever herself, kind of like a Katie, kind of like an Eleanor. And she just becomes like this monster. And that was the line that the original Mean Girl said to, they named her, first name was Fern, and they changed her name to Violette. So she only went by the name Violette in the movie.
Whoa. Okay. I had seen that and I wrote it down. I'm like, I have no idea how to pronounce this. Hopefully Sarah knows.
Yeah, Violette. Because okay. Like her name was Fern, which Fern is an adorable name.
Fern is great. She's like, Fern, but you know what? This was a 90s movie, yeah. Right? Jawbreaker. Yeah. By 90s standards, Fern was not an adorable name. Like yeah. By today's standards, people love a freaking nature name. Adler and Kane and... you know, yeah. Like all those,
all
like
these
very
names, yeah.
You know, Hunter.
Well, the line was, "Why would you want to be a plant when you can be a flower?"
Oh, what a genius line!
Yeah,
all the That's Emmys good. Just That's for that good. Line.
Yeah, I really do think that people should watch Jawbreaker just because it's number one. Like it's just wild and crazy, but also it's I think like you're going to find a lot of references to modern day TV, like Do Revenge or other things, and be like, oh, that's what they were referencing this in this movie.
Gotcha.
Anything else from the Jawbreaker that you've seen?
The one other one I had was in Jawbreaker, apparently someone has a license plate that just says bitch. And at the beginning of this movie, yeah. Going to Rhea's party, someone has a license plate that says D-U-M-B-T-C-H.
Yes,
so, I thought that was also good. And let me just tell you, as someone who has personally purchased a vanity license plate, yeah. Those would not fly, either of those. And I
you cannot.
Does that get rejected?
Can't get that. No, you have to like let it. It has to go through the process and they flag it, yeah, if they don't think it's
do shit. If you do like SH exclamation, well, you don't do it. SH1T, they're not gonna let you do it. They won't let you do it.
No,
yeah, because once I really this is so dumb, but who cares? I want it. So I have a golden retriever and he's very fluffy, and like the hair, the fluff that he gets on like his hindquarters, we call it his butt fluff because that's what it is. It's butt fluff. And so I looked up once if I could get butt fluff as a vanity plate, and they wouldn't let me use butt. Isn't that dumb?
No butt.
No butt in the state of New York. Not allowed.
I think that if you, I mean.
Maybe some states are a little bit less, you know, finicky there.
Yeah, than New York.
On New York. Well, they won't let that fly.
So I missed one earlier that I want to make sure I say. When we were talking about Cruel Intentions, at the school assembly, Gabby is reading the book Dangerous Liaisons. So that's
of course.
Yes. Okay. So Sarah, you also mentioned this one earlier, and forgive me because I haven't seen this movie. Is it Romy and Michelle? Romy and Michelle?
Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
I haven't seen
the outfits. Tell me it's the outfits when they go into that dance or whatever.
Yeah, yes. Made in 1997. Basically, they call out like several of Drea's outfits, like her party dress in the beginning, and also her dress and whole styling at the end.
One with the zippers. I think it's Eleanor that's wearing it. I think is it orange? And there's all these zippers all over it. I could not stop thinking about Romy and Michelle because it gave me those exact vibes of like only Romy and Michelle would wear these ridiculous outfits.
So the fashion designer, Mona May, who was the fashion designer for Clueless, I've talked about this before, also is the fashion designer for Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion. It was also the fashion designer for Never Been Kissed. And you know Josie Grossi, when she was wearing that coat with the fluffy collar, that's like so much Do Revenge as well. I just love that fashion designer so much. The costume designer for this movie was Alana Morshed, and she's a genius. She did a great job.
So if you don't watch the YouTube channel Modern Girls, which I believe is Girls with a Z, kind of a silly name, but really great YouTube channel if you're interested in any of like the fashion in movies or TV shows.
Ooh.
They've done a whole video on Mona May, and so I have no, like, my references to most of these movies are the ones that I haven't seen are because of that YouTube channel. They do a lot. They just did one all about different like fashion subcultures. So they did one on like cottagecore, and they just did one on like the evolution of like witch fashion culture in media and
whimsy
stuff.
Goth is whimsy, yes, whimsy goth, the ultimate autumn aesthetic.
Yes. Oh, and they God. They made one on Do Revenge as well, which is where yeah. I got some of these references. Highly recommend that YouTube channel if you don't watch it.
This is what I'm gonna be doing for the rest of the night.
Yes, it's great.
You've lost me. I'm gone yeah. forever.
I this is what I'm here for, to get people to subscribe to new YouTube channels. That's the main thing. There's a quick one from Strangers on a Train, which was from 1951, where Eleanor is reading Strangers on a Train by Alfred Hitchcock. And one article I found said that Do Revenge is actually based loosely on that book as well. Oh. The idea of people doing each other's revenge and meeting who are strangers, but maybe not. I am making all this up, by the way. Do not quote me if that is like not what Strangers on a Train is about, but like that's what I saw. So
it was an ingenious plan if you think about it.
It was.
Hypothetically, you wouldn't, yes, you're one step removed or a few steps removed. They didn't, nobody knew that they knew each other up until. Well,
the only thing is they needed to stay, yeah, they needed to make sure they kept apart from each other.
Yeah, Drea okay. got a little.
I feel very vindicated. One of my things is saying things like fact that I have no idea about, but they just, from context clues, sound like they would be right. The story of Strangers on a Train is two strangers who meet on a train, one of whom is a psychopath who suggests that they exchange murders so neither of them will be caught. The film, and then it received mixed reviews, apparently. But now is regarded much more favorably. Anyway, that's apparently what the plot is based on. So, go us.
Amazing. You facted correctly.
Great. I made that up, but it was true. That. Okay. Heathers, 1988, so late 80s.
Yes.
There's
the fashion
a couple
as well.
Here. Fashion, of course. Like we've mentioned, Heathers is a bit darker, but is a lot of the inspiration for a lot of dark comedies that have come after it. There's not as much murder or any murder in this movie, but the brutal way that they take people down, both with hitting them with a car, the drugging, and I would argue also the reference you said where Drea says, I'm going to murder them, and then says no. In Heathers, she really would murder them. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They really, what it was, Christian Bale. Is that who the guy in the movie was? I'm trying to remember.
I haven't seen Heathers.
I've never seen Heathers either.
Oh, Heathers is the music. Christian Slater, excuse me.
Christian Slater.
Yeah, Christian Slater. Yeah, he was. So what he did was he was kind of like the evil guy that comes in. And Winona Ryder, whose name was Veronica, she was like, the Heathers were the mean girls. They like tolerated Veronica, but they were terrible in the school. So Christian Slater was like, hey, Veronica, like we can get rid of all these mean girls. And then they were doing the murders together.
Okay. Did either of you watch the show Recess?
Of yes. course.
Okay. Now I feel like I'm making this up, but I don't know if this is the thing. Was there a clique of girls who all had the same name?
Yes. Ashley's.
Yeah. The Ashley's. I wonder if that was based on the Heathers.
It has to be. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I remember in elementary school, I really did not like any other Sarah.
Neither did I. I boycotted. There were no other Marys. There was like Mary Ann's, Mary Kate's, Mary Claire's. And yeah. I finally, my senior year, a freshman came in and her name was Mary and she was my band class. And I'm like, you're not going by Mary. You need a new name.
You're out of here. Get out of here. Yeah. I'm surprised. I mean, like, I give props to anyone who's like, you have the same name as me. Okay. We're best friends. Like, I'm thinking, or even Taylor Lautner, who is now married to Taylor Lautner. Like, the audacity.
No.
Why are you married to somebody that has this same exact name? Like, you know, that's just going overboard. But
yeah. Oh gosh. So also when at the end of the movie, when Drea visits Carissa at rehab, she's playing croquet, and croquet has big Heathers energy.
Oh yes.
Let's see.
They love croquet. A
couple quick ones. Fatal Attraction, which was 1987. They talk about Glenergy, and in that movie, Glenn Close's role as an obsessive stalker, which they sort of joke about Eleanor having Glenergy, and then later on it's like, oh no, she's definitely
she
got
really
Glenergy.
Is having Glenergy. Yeah. Truly.
This one is not a direct reference, but in the beginning, when Eleanor is driving Drea from tennis camp, Maya Hawke, the actress who plays Eleanor, really, really resembles her mom, Uma Thurman, from a scene in Kill Bill 2.
Yes.
Yes, the outfit, right?
Yep. The hairdo, the outfit, like the whole stance, the car, it's all very similar. Have either of you seen the 1999 movie, But I'm a Cheerleader?
Yes. Okay. My favorite story about But I'm the Cheerleader is that I turned on But I'm a Cheerleader and I was very convinced that it was Bring It On, and it's very not Bring It On.
No, it's not. It's
very not very Bring It On.
Very different movie.
It's a very different movie, but I was convinced. I turned it on in my like family den watching room and I was like, oh, look, Bring It On's on because there's cheerleaders. Lesbian cheerleaders is not Bring It On. It's very different.
Yeah. Jess, have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
Last I checked, it was free to watch on YouTube. Yeah. It's a good rainy day watch. Yeah. So the main thing that stands out to me is the color aesthetic, like of everything in this movie. The pink, green, or like pink and green and lavender, reflects the very pastel palette of that movie as well. Thelma and Louise, 1991, basically the entire like female bonds and feminist revenge plot lines.
You gotta watch Thelma and Louise. I've never seen that before.
Never Been Kissed, 1999. Both Eleanor and Josie in that movie mold themselves into curated popular kids and lose themselves in the process. Okay, this is later. Then I started getting into 2000s ones.
I have one more 90s one if you don't.
Okay, good. Yeah, what's your last 90s
one? The Craft. So The Craft is like my favorite witchy's 90 movie. And once again, it's kind of the same thing where there's a girl who's an outsider gets into a crowd where it's like mean girls / witches. But the Instagram witch kind of reminded me of The Craft, but also the light as the feather, stiff as the board.
Oh, yeah.
They did that in The Craft as well.
Yes. Let's see. I thought that the matching jackets that all of the popular kids have, which is another subtle thing, like at the very beginning, before the summer break, Drea and Tara are walking and they have like their jackets slung over their shoulders and each girl has a different color. Drea has pink, Tara has orange. The other girls have their jackets. And then at the end of the movie, when Max and his friends welcome Eleanor in for her birthday, they give her like her blue green jacket. And that's when Drea really realizes like, oh, I've been completely replaced. And mostly that just reminded me of in Cheetah Girls from 2003 when they all have like the matching
Cheetah Sisters.
Oh
Cheetah
my sisters. Gosh, I haven't heard a Cheetah Girls reference in so long.
Yeah, so that's not an official reference. That's just something I thought. That's reminded
hilarious.
Me of.
Hilarious.
In John Tucker Must Die from 2006, basically Max's popularity actually rising when he is a despicable person, which also was very Mean Girls of like they try to take down Regina but make her more popular. Jennifer's Body from 2009. There's a point when Sophie Turner, who plays Erica in this movie, when she's at rehab, she's painting a drawing of Drea with like devil horns and stuff.
Yes.
And it really looks a lot like Jennifer Check in that movie as well.
That was one of the moments that I actually did laugh out loud about. I don't know why. Just like Sophie Turner, like feverishly making that painting at the easel. It just cracked me up every single time I saw it.
So good. The last two, Promising Young Woman from 2020, there is a direct reference where Eleanor smears her lipstick across her face like Cassie does in that movie. And then this last one, they just quote Taylor Swift's song,
"Oh,
What
Yes.
You Made Me Do."
She's dead.
She can't come to the phone right now because she's dead. So those are all the ones that I found that were references. You could probably find more, or
I'm
at
sure
least
there are more.
Find more things that you feel like it reminds you of.
That's the thing, is it does such a good job of like referencing these and paying homage to them while still retaining its like own fun storyline that is interesting. And like, even if it's been done before, like the revenge storyline has been done before, it felt like it had enough twists and modern takes on things.
Yeah.
That I still really enjoyed it. Right. Like a sex tape type of thing, right? All the text messages, like it's using modern things to tell a revenge story, which has been told before, but it has like modern twists on it, which I really enjoyed. I thought it was really well done.
So we talked about a lot of the references. I know that the cast was pretty interesting. Do you have any standouts, either of you, from the cast that you want to mention?
I mean, I love Maya Hawke in Stranger Things. And so like she was the one that when I saw she was in the cast, I was most excited about, just because I know her probably the best out of this cast. And I just think she's like so supremely talented in Stranger Things. I thought she was excellent in this film as well. I just think she like, I don't know, I think she has a very interesting look about her, and the way they styled her in this movie made her stand out a lot. And I think, unlike in most movies, I found it a little bit more believable. She's beautiful, don't get me wrong. I found it a little bit more believable that she would be an awkward kid. Mm-hmm. I thought like the hair especially looked quite disheveled in a way, again, like it looks like a wig, but like it made me laugh because, again, very 90s of like she's all that. It's like, oh, this girl's gorgeous, but we're gonna pretend she's ugly. At least she was acting a little bit like nerdier mm-hmm. and awkward than some of those characters I've seen before.
Yeah, I thought that she did a great job, as well as kind of playing somebody that had like an edge to her, and there was also an air of mystery to her as well. It's like, who is this girl? Like, what is she doing?
There were a couple moments when I saw it the first time that I thought were like slightly odd acting choices. I was like, why? Like, she's acting like a person who's supposed to be awkward, not like someone who is awkward. And then after you watch the whole movie, you're like, no, that made total sense, because she's actually, I'm like, she doesn't seem like really that mad at Carissa. It's like, well, that's because she's not.
Carissa's
not the one.
It's next level acting. It's layers upon layers.
Yeah, it is. Acting. It really is.
And no, and then she also in the same like scene, she was just talking about, she's like, oh, like I just wanted to get revenge on her. I don't want her to go to like jail for life, you mm-hmm. know? And it's because like she's totally innocent except for growing pot and mushrooms on school campus.
Yeah. They do a great job in this movie of making it like dropping enough hints where if you're really, really pausing it or picking up on it, then you could potentially see a lot of what's coming, but it does a more of a, like, it more like kind of puts you a little bit on edge where you're like, something's not quite right, but I don't know what it is. So you're still surprised when it happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously Camila Mendez, who plays the main character Drea, known mostly for her role as Veronica Lodge in Riverdale. Here's the main thing I would say. This movie was, I'm really hard on Camila Mendez, or the character of Veronica in Riverdale. Yeah. She's my least favorite character.
What? But her eyebrows are so good.
Okay. It has nothing to do with the way she looks. She looks great. her character has the most boring plot lines, and she's in the same plot line for the last like 7 years, and it's just not fun. And it's rough. And she has some of the most cringy lines. And the thing that this movie really showed me, and hopefully the rest of the world, is like, oh no, she can really act and she can be funny. Aww. It's just the bad writing in the other show. And like a lot of people have been able to see this with Lily Reinhart, because she was in Hustlers and some other stuff where she got to see it. So I will just continue the same stance that Kirsten says, which is they need to cancel Riverdale so that these actors can be let go and let flourish in other areas.
Be free. You don't be have free. To live this Riverdale life.
Yeah. But I do. Now, still how different is
so? Like, I know you said she obviously acts a little bit better in this film, just or because of like the lines that she's given and the work, you know, what she has to work with. But would you say like her character Drea in this is at all similar to Veronica in Riverdale, or are they like complete opposites?
Well, I would say like Veronica is wealthy, and Drea here is just sort of trying to appear that way. So Drea is a much more the like three-dimensional character, whereas Veronica's it really does come down to the writing for so much of why it's such a horrible character, because like the line that we talked about earlier where in Due Revenge, where Eleanor says like, oh, it's really problematic to give makeovers, Andrea says yes, but it's fun, like that line kind of reminded me of a lot of things they do in Riverdale, which is they will actively like call out the things they know that people will say are problematic on the show, but their response, it doesn't do enough to make it funny and light. It's like, oh no, you just made it weirder by calling it out. Like there was a scene where they had one character who is in the show is a lesbian and another character who's straight kiss, and the lesbian says, you know, this is queer baiting. And then Veronica's character says, well, it's not queer baiting if it's saving the world. And it's like, no, it's still bad. This is still so weird.
What? Riverdale. Yep. Oh my gosh.
So it's like stuff like that where you're like, you walked all around. You know how like Glee, it's like sometimes they'll like approach really important conversations, but then sometimes they'll take those same conversations and just like really do horrible stuff about that. Like I can't think of a 110%. Great example.
I mean, but you know what I mean. All the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Riverdale's nowhere near as egregious as Glee is, but they still will do stuff like that where they're like, they'll bring up an important topic of conversation, but not quite do enough to actually get it across the board kind of. But other than that, to answer your question, Jess, like Drea and Veronica do have some similarities, but whereas instead of like they on Riverdale, they're just so constantly trying to make the characters be the good guys, but then do questionable things. Whereas on this show, they're more like, oh no, we're going to show that Drea is bad. Like they let the bad characters be bad sometimes.
Yeah.
Don't try to force them into a hero box.
Yeah.
So that's
Loved that. I kind of liked how at the end, it's like, yeah, Max is a complete shit, piece of shit. But also like Drea and Eleanor are like manipulative, like psychos. Like they are crazy. Yeah. And they kind of are like, yeah, we're like soulmates. We're like crazy soulmates. And we're just going to go off and drive away in our turquoise car and live like our evil life together.
Yeah.
And that's fun.
Speaking of Max, I of course recognize him from Euphoria. He plays Ethan in Euphoria. And I was like having such a rough time because in Euphoria, he's like this really nice guy. And so to have him be like the complete opposite and like such a douche was so difficult for me. It was like such a weird transition because I'm just so used to his character on Euphoria. So but he did a good job. It just was like very difficult for me personally.
When he first came out, I was like, oh, he looks familiar, but I don't watch Euphoria, so I didn't know what it was from. He was in the movie Paper Towns.
Yes.
And he played just sort of like the dorky friend in that movie. And it was just the fact that they had his like hair slicked back and the whole look and his whole character in this. I was like, oh, well, look at the range on this guy, because that is not the character he played in Paper Towns.
It was a little unbelievable that like Max was just like the highest tier of popularity.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're not in the like 90s anymore where all of the like most popular guys are 25-year-old like blonde white men, but like for sure he's a little, he looks like he should be the nerdy kid. Like, well, he looks like he'd be cast to play
I will say Timothy Chalamet. I will say like
yes,
maybe I don't know.
I don't know what modern standards of hotness are anymore.
Maybe like high school students prefer the Timothy Chalamet archetype to the like Chris Evans. I don't know.
Who knows? I don't know.
People probably still like Chris Evans. What am I saying? But yeah, I don't know. It's definitely different, but I felt like it felt modern instead of feeling super unrealistic. So I don't know. And then did you all recognize the other popular guy, Elliot?
Well, they said Elliot a lot. There, I love how like every single time they had something going on, they're like, "Well, what does Elliot think?" And then Elliot's just like magically there, and Elliot's like gives his opinion.
I don't know who Elliot is.
Elliot is played by, I believe his name is Jonathan Davis.
Yes, it is.
Yes, who he is in the show Outer Banks.
I've never watched that.
He plays Pope in Outer Banks, and he's also like a very, very sweet good guy in Outer Banks. And so watching him be kind of a turd in this movie.
Hard. One that I thought was funny, Sarah, you probably recognize the character Montana.
Yeah.
Maya Refico. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce her last name, but she was from Pretty Little Liars, Original Sin, which of course we covered on Pusher Recaps.
Yep.
And she played Noah, who was like, this character was very much just in that like stupid, like she's dumb. Like she is the girl from Mean Girls who's like, there's a 70% chance it's already raining. Like that's who she is. But in Pretty Little Liars, Original Sin, she's much, she's very sweet, but she has a bit more of an edge to her. She was my favorite character,
I think, in that show. Well, one of.
Yeah. They're all very good, but yeah, it is interesting to see her play like a very one note dumb character in this movie.
Yeah. Because the plot has so much more to do with like taking down Max rather than the other girls. We don't get nearly as much about Montana or the other friend, Megan.
Had some good lines.
Megan has a couple good lines, especially in the beginning. And Montana eats messily in like every scene. Like, I don't know what's going on.
She always has food on her face or something.
Yeah. The obvious other pick is Sophie Turner playing Erica. And I was like, ma'am, excuse me? What is
I don't do cocaine.
Accent? I was like, because as soon as she came on screen, I'm like, the fuck is Sophie Turner doing in this movie? I was shocked.
Yeah, that was a funny little cameo. And her friend who was just like bawling next to her, she's like repeating everything that Sophie Turner says. She's like, she doesn't even do cocaine. She doesn't even know what she looks like.
It was very good. It was very good.
Yeah.
Oh, and the one other guy, actually, I did recognize it. I didn't at first, and I think it could have just been the hair color that threw me off, was the character who played Rish Shah. He was in Miss Marvel recently, and I recognized him from that. But the hair threw me off. My husband had to be like, "Hey, you know him?"
Yeah, blue hair. What did Will think of this movie?
He liked it. He was like, "What is happening?" Like I don't think he saw the twist coming either. But like once it did, he was like, "Oh!" But he did enjoy it. I think for both of us, right? It was what, an hour 40 maybe?
It was about two hours actually.
Yeah, like two.
It was a bit long for us, I think, which again, like, I'm not shaming it. I feel like they packed a lot into those 2 hours, but even still, a movie like this feels like it should be closer to an hour and a half.
Fair enough. Agree. That's a good
critique. Also someone who is just like, please stop making long movies because I don't have the attention span for them. But that's always been my take. Shorten your movies.
So, okay, we talked about a lot of the cast, and I'll second the Sophie Turner thing. She steals, like, every scene that she's in, although she's only in the movie for about 2 scenes, but love it. Do either of you have any other moments we haven't talked about that really stand out or any funny lines or anything that you want to mention?
I mean, I feel like we hit, like, so many of the good points. I think that the I don't know, anything that Sarah Michelle Gellar was in, or when the girls were talking about how much they idolize their headmistress, I thought was very funny. There's this one scene where it's like, I want to, like, I don't know, do her laundry for like a month or like whatever they were doing, like to prove how much like they loved her. I thought that was very funny. I thought that the Sarah Michelle Gellar clipping the bonsai, which was a reference to something. I just can't remember what it was. But some other teacher clipped bonsais. Maybe like, was it Joan Cusack or somebody? No, not Joan Cusack.
Are you talking about 10 Things I Hate About You?
10 Things I Hate About You. The
guidance counselor.
Oh yeah, the guidance counselor. The girl that plays the mom and mom. What's her name?
Oh, Amy Poehler and Mean
Girls?
Wait, are you talking about Ten Things I Hate About You?
Okay, so
the show mom.
The show mom.
I don't know. I don't watch the show
mom. She was in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Allison Janney is who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think that she was clipping a bonsai.
Who I do weirdly mix up with Joan Cusack a lot.
They look a lot alike.
Right. They're not the same person at all. But I do.
Yeah, they're very different.
The other day, I thought it, yeah.
I think that would that's and then I very much liked the party at the end where it was just like this Ivy party, like where do these kids find the money to throw these parties in the time? I know.
They're all rich, that's the thing.
Yeah. Oh, and one last thing. I really liked how at the end credits they had like the little things in the boxes. It's just very once again 90s movie, the end clips.
I think my favorite thing about this movie, beyond like again it's very funny and all the 90s references, I really just like want to again commend like the fashion department. I feel like it's easy to cut costs and stuff and like not really put a lot into what the characters are wearing. But like to me, this was one of those films where if it had been like a theater released movie, right? Like if it was like a big deal, like a Mean Girls of sorts, I could easily see so many of these outfits being made into Halloween costumes because they're just so interesting to look at and like so different, but at the same time believable. And you can tell there is something to a movie about where you could be like, I know exactly when this movie came out based on what the characters are wearing in a good way, right? Where you're like, oh, okay. So this is like, it's wild, but you know when it was released because of like the structure of the outfits, right? I don't know. I really, really enjoyed just visually watching all of what was going on, especially the Romeo and Michelle inspired looking outfits, just because like this orange outfit with the zippers and it has like a neck piece that only goes.
You're entranced by it.
It is intriguing. It is like the weirdest outfit I've ever seen, but also I love it. It's like, how do you even put it on? Like, it just, I don't know. I just love the fashion in this movie. I thought they did a really good job at just like elevating everything. They're like, we'll do like a Dumb and Dumber. One of them wore an orange and one wore a blue. No, but it has to have 7,000 zippers. Okay, great. It also has to have a jacket that goes with it, you know? I just thought that was like a really fun aspect of the movie that you just don't see in every movie, especially not like a teen dark comedy like this.
I don't think these movies are similar, but I think I left this movie feeling the same sort of happiness I felt when I left Booksmart, which was in theaters. And that's like the other most recent sort of modern teen movie I can think of that I saw in theaters.
I really wanted to see that, but I haven't.
Oh, if you haven't seen Booksmart,
okay, I should check it out. Yeah, that's with Haley Feldstein and Caitlin Dever.
Yeah, and oh my gosh, what's her name? Carrie Fisher's daughter.
Oh, Billie Lord.
Billie Lloyd. She steals the movie.
I love Billie Lord. So Billie Lord was in Scream Queens, as I mentioned earlier, and she's part of Ryan Murphy's you have to be in every single season of American Horror Story and a whole bunch of stuff. She's my favorite. I love her.
Yes, she is really good in that. And I saw Ticket to Paradise yesterday, and she was in that as well. And so was Caitlin Denvers.
Really?
Yeah, it was a similar cast. It was cute. It was a George Clooney, Julia Roberts movie.
I know. So. They were supposed to save rom-coms. Did they save rom-coms?
I don't know. I mean, I think rom-coms are still alive, personally.
Oh, okay, perfect.
I think it was good. I think it was cute, and it was a fun story. So that was a fun movie. It just reminded me of Ocean's 11 because that was the last time I saw them as a couple.
Two of them, yeah.
Yes. I mean, nothing else about the movie reminds me of Ocean's 11 except
just,
for that.
Just the two people in it, yeah.
Yep, just them. Anyway, so yeah, I really think if for some reason you've listened to this whole thing and you've been spoiled but you haven't seen the movie, go watch Do Revenge. It was great. Maybe mm-hmm. if you're like Jess, break it up into two sittings because it is 2 hours.
It is a long movie, but it is worth it. I thought, like, once we got to like the twist, I was like, oh well, that's why this is a longer movie, because they had to set up everything before it, and there's a lot of twists and turns. It felt very Cruel Intentions to me in that way, where it was like every time you feel like you're getting a not like bored, but you're a bit like looking at your watch of like, okay, how much time is left? They're like, boom, something else to pull you right back in.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you for putting up with this idea. Thank you both for watching this movie.
Most fun collaboration. Yes.
Yeah, it's a crossover event of the season.
Yeah, yes. of the year.
Of the decade.
Yeah. Wow, indeed. Century. Okay, now we're just going crazy.
We're just going.
How can we one up each other in terms of time, length of time? But thank you so much, Mary. Yeah, like, tell us about what's going on in Kowski Cast. Like, when is Riverdale coming back? Like, how much are we going to get tortured with more Riverdale?
So I got really nervous the other day because I started seeing on the Instagram that they were filming again. And yes. I'm like, no, I like my break. I do believe actually they were originally shooting to have the show start back up in this fall, like right now. But oh, wow. I think that they are actually not going to release until the new year. So I think we have a little bit more time, but it is a final season, seventh season, final
I'm
season.
So happy for you.
Maybe a shortened season. We don't know. And I fully intend once the show is over to like binge watch the whole thing again, because I still really like it, but it's brutal on the week by week, let me tell you.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I am very, I love the girls' TikTok. I think it's Blonde, Brunette, and Redhead.
Yes,
or
Redhead.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And they do all the TikTok trends and all the dances, and they're very talented at that.
Yeah, they just did for Halloween, they were the Sanderson sisters, and it was really good. Yeah. Yeah. And I did, for other Kowski Cast listeners, I did have contact the other day with Rachel, who does Twyfight with me, and we discussed how we are definitely going to be doing book two very soon. So for those of you who listen to our Twilight coverage, we are starting New Moon. Oh, don't worry, it's happening. The only podcast on Kowski Cast that people have actually been like, wait, where is it? When's it coming back? So don't worry, it'll
New
be coming
Moon was
back.
A moment. Gosh.
Yeah, I love New Moon. It's my favorite of the Twilight books. So
I used to lend those books out. Like, I was a personal library. I would like check them out to all my friends. Like, hello, you have to read every single Twilight book. What do you think? Are you a Jacob or are you an Edward lover?
I'm an Edward fan. And weirdly, yeah, people would think Jacob, considering
because
I love
New Moon.
No, I love sadness. So
Me too.
How sad and depressed she is the whole book. It's really horrible, but it really spoke to me at the time.
And I had emotional.
People, this is like 11th grade me or 10th grade me hasn't even had a relationship. And I'm like, oh, I identify with this. Like, do you?
Oh my God. Freaking New Moon, man.
I was like, oh, it's so deep.
It's the best of times and the worst of times, I swear.
Still love Blue Moon. But anyway.
Well, I'm excited for you to cover it. Is it going to be like a chapter by chapter type of thing?
Yeah, it's we do two chapters at a time, but yes, my co-host Rachel hates Twilight with a burning passion, and I love Twilight, so we have a little podcast called Twyfight.
I love that. Yes. It's amazing.
Yes, so Jess and Sarah, can you tell the audience, in case they don't already know, a little bit about what you're doing over on Shit 90 Shows?
Go ahead. Yeah. Sarah.
Yeah, so we are a 90s rewatch podcast. We are in our seventh and final season of Boy Meets World. Mary has been amazing and has been with us for at least like the last four seasons, covering an episode every season, and we're going to have her back very, very, very soon, which is just how the timing worked out. And we're in our fifth season, the college years of Dawson's Creek. So much fun covering all things 90s shows, as well as 90s movies or 90s inspired movies, whichever. And yeah, you can find us at Shit 90s Pod, and stay tuned for some 90s Christmas content coming around the corner. Also, Jess is very active on the PSR.
Oh, yeah, I'm over on Posture Recaps covering community, but we cover the show Community on community building. We are in the fourth season. I know what you're thinking. It's the Gas Leak season. I agree, which is why we're covering two episodes at a time to speed on right through it, because I personally don't really like season four of Community. But you can hear me chat about that over on community building. And of course, I'm also currently covering the third season of Mythic Quest, which is an Apple TV Plus show that is just so much fun. So go check out all of that. You can find me at the Jess Sterling. And Sarah, you just recently covered all of The Crown over on Posture Recaps in one podcast.
Yeah. So me and Latanya Starks, we covered the fifth season of The Crown. We binge watched it and we talked all about it. And that was a lot of fun talking about that.
So go check us out over there. And Mary, you said, did you say where people can find you on Twitter?
Oh, yes. Frail Mary everywhere.
Perfect. So yeah, if you want to check out anything, no matter where you came in, whether you came in through Mary or us, you have so much other content out there now that you can go check out. And this was such a fun collaboration. I really liked this movie. I thought it kind of, like you said, it scratched both itches, right? We had all our 90s content in there, all our 90s homages. And then you had your Riverdale people. And there's just like so many. I love it. It's a great crossover.
And just general revenge.
General revenge.
General revenge.
Yeah.
It sounds like a person, General Revenge. So yeah, I think that's all we have, everyone. So thank you so much for listening. Check us out on our respective podcasts, and who knows, maybe if we find another movie that fits both bills, we'll come back and do this again. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.
Shit 90 shows taught me.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.